Welcome to the Future Thinkers Podcast. I'm Mike Gilliland.
And I'm Yulia Ivanova. And this podcast is all about the future.
All right, guys. Thanks for joining us on the show. It's good to have you. This is Matt and Mike from
the Robot Overlords Podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Why don't you start by telling us a bit about yourselves? Tell us your story.
Well, really for us, I think it started with the idea, just Matt and I talking, but also trying to explain to our friends some of the topics that we saw out in the world. I'm a big science fiction fan, and just the idea of the future has always fascinated me and you know, how the world is changing. So I kind of dragged Matt into this.
I'm not as big a sci-fi fan, but I am very interested, and I've always been interested in, you know, how things are going to change and what the future is going to look like. So it's kind of an odd, you know, not to be into sci-fi, but to, I'm not into sci-fi. I'm just not into it at the level that Mike is. So it's, since we started doing this, it's opened up a lot of interesting things for me. So
cool. Well, and we also started a little bit because politically we're slightly different. I mean, I think both of us have a libertarian streak. It may be slightly different flavors, but I tended to be more on the Occupy side of things, and Matt tended to be a little bit more on the Tea Party side of things. And when we first started recording episodes, we actually recorded a little bit in 2011, and it was a way to, well, here are two sides. They both have some things that they get right about politics in the States. Maybe, you know, we should try to look at the things they agree on or things that they each bring to the table and talk those through, rather than this constant, you know, your side, my side. And that, unfortunately, we didn't get too far with recording back then. We kind of quit right away at the beginning of 2012. We picked it up again last year in 2014, and you know, we've done episodes every Tuesday and Thursday on pretty much all year except for the holidays. And I think we drifted away from the political aspect relatively quickly, other than politics being kind of messed up. But, you know, the idea of the future for us was probably the biggest driver.
What are you guys' takes on the solutions? Like, how do you envision the future being, the ideal future?
I don't have any answers. That's part of the fun of actually doing the podcast, of playing around with ideas. I'm a big fan of Robert Heinlein's term, grok, of trying to understand things. And the older I get, the less I understand. So, you know, it's just a way to consider ideas. I mean, personally, I'd like to see us get to some kind of Star Trek system where, you know, people are just out to better themselves. But in terms of the roadmap there, I think no one has really come up with a definitive roadmap. So there's all kinds of ideas out there.
You mentioned Star Trek. I like the idea of becoming one with a Borg.
Different variations of that. I've been a huge fan lately of Ramaz Nam, his science fiction. He's got two books out, Nexus and Crux, and then the third book actually comes out next month called Apex. And in that, he sort of posits a nanotechnology that actually links people's brains together. And rather than sort of a top-down kind of Borg structure, he's got several almost living organisms that come about from people voluntarily associating, you know, so sort of like-minded people get together and they form this intelligence that just by connecting with each other that's greater than the sum of their parts in that technology. And some people might find that idea pretty scary, but certainly the way it plays out in fiction, the problem I have somewhat with science fiction is that, you know, it's a constructed story, so it's they can manipulate things that when it comes to, you know, the rubber meeting the road with reality, they don't necessarily play out that way.
What are some other recent good movies, books that you guys have read or watched lately that are future related?
Well, Matt found us The Machine. Yeah, I thought, if you guys haven't seen The Machine, I think it's their website is The Machine Movie. It's relatively similar to the movie that's coming out now, Ex Machina, but it's also an independent film about AI. I thought it was really well done. And in that story, it kind of had the AI emerging from a military project.
Interesting.
Speaking of AI movies, have you seen Chappie?
I have not seen Chappie yet. yeah. I'm not a big fan of, is it Die Antwoord?
Yeah.
To be honest, them being in it has been kind of a turnoff. So I was excited about it first until I saw that they were in it.
Yeah.
I'll probably rent it.
It probably qualifies as a music video for them.
It was kind of terrible, actually. I didn't like it. What was the movie that we watched it back-to-back with?
Interstellar.
Interstellar, yeah. So we watched it back-to-back with Interstellar. So Interstellar was so amazing that Chappie was just so terrible in comparison.
I felt like I had brain damage from something after. Like, I just watched Interstellar, and then I was like, oh, God, what is this? And did I hurt myself?
You guys have obviously, I'm assuming you've seen Her.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did a review on that one. It was really good.
Did you guys like that one?
Yeah.
We loved
we
it.
Did a,
loved
we
it.
Also did a podcast review on that one as well.
Two, actually. I think because we folded Her and The Machine into one with Tom and Jeannie Lombardo.
Yes.
From the Center for Future Consciousness.
Yes.
Cool. Yeah, I'll have to check out The Machine. Have you seen, what was that one with Johnny Depp, Transcendence? Oh, God. Why is everyone being dystopian?
Yeah. You know, there was so much about that movie that could have been good, and it just wasn't. I've watched it three times now. Just because I guess I like punishing myself.
Maybe you were really trying to see the good parts, find the good parts.
All the singularity stuff that's in that is actually really good, but the whole context of technology bad, you know, the sort of the story, the way the writers move their little action figure characters is so terrible. It's just, you know, a missed opportunity for a good movie.
Yeah, shoot the nanobots.
Yeah, shoot the nanobots.
At least they didn't load a virus up to the alien spaceship with a MacBook PowerBook.
Well, that's good. Part two's coming out for that, so.
Good.
It'll be a virus uploaded from an iPhone then.
Yeah, probably.
Have you guys seen the documentary on Anonymous called We Are Legion?
I have to look for that one. I've been following Alex Winter's Deep Web documentary about Silk Road and Bitcoin, I think. And Matt was a big fan of Going Clear, the Scientology documentary. We do watch a lot of documentaries.
Yeah.
We're planning to talk about Going Clear as soon as I get around to watching it. And I think Citizen Four is also on our list.
Yeah, the Internet's own boy, we actually did a review of that one, too, about Aaron Schwartz and him being sued by the government.
Yeah, I just read about that story. They're actually building some program on top of Ethereum that is named after him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Matt originally turned me on to Downloaded, which is all Alex Winter's documentary about Napster. And you know, both of us were huge fans of Napster back in the day. And to see that documentary, I mean, there's a hilarious bit with, I think it's Katie Couric and Bryant Gumbel talking about the internet from, like, what is that, like 1995,
98? Oh, yeah.
What is that internet?
What's this internet thing?
Yeah, the that Napster thing, you know, because Napster's been dead for so many years, and I thought, wow, this will be, you know, I wasn't sure what to expect because it's been, you know, it's been so long, but a lot of what they talk about is still applicable today, and it was a great documentary.
Matt's kind of been dragged into being interested in copyright because of the shit that I talk about all the time. I've been very interested in copyright ever since I actually bought the first MP3 player, the Diamond Rio. This would have been 98, and oh my God, was it a cheap piece of crap. But, you know, you could fit way more songs than a CD on it. At the time, until the battery hatch kind of broke, you could shake it and it wouldn't skip, which, you know, everybody else had their Discman, and if you tried to shake one of those, you'd really mess it up.
Yeah, we'd always go for it. You'd see the 30-second disc skip resistance or whatever that thing was called, and then we'd just shake it for 30 seconds. Oh, no, it's not 30 seconds.
Hacker mentality. Try to break things.
I had my mom call me the other day, really worried about all the pirated music that my dad's been downloading. So she's like, hey, are they going to come take the laptop away? No idea about it. No, it's okay, Mom, but you might want to stop doing that.
Yeah, I can remember when Napster first came out, and I have a pretty extensive CD collection. And when Napster first hit, it was basically like a kid in a candy store. It wasn't the stuff that I already had. It was stuff that, you know, had been out of print for so long that, you know, on eBay was going for, you know, a lot of money or whatever. And you could get all this stuff for, you know, for free that you couldn't touch. Not for wanting to, but just because it had been out of print so long. So when Napster first came out, I was burning up my computer as fast as I could good stuff downloaded.
Yeah.
Well, it was also great for discovering new music because I went from, I think I at the time was buying like maybe one CD a month, and then Napster hit, and all of a sudden I was buying like four and five a month. I burned through way more than I should have spent on CDs, and then they basically sued them out of existence, and I immediately went to buying zero. You know, I didn't even go back to buying music at all, really. I mean, I just kind of turned music off. It was kind of sad, actually. I felt really bad at that point that I'd been cut off from music.
That reminds me, when I was a kid, I was one of the first kids in my school to buy a CD burner, so I turned it into a little business. Since my parents owned the CD store, I'd take all the CDs, burn them, and then copy them and give them to my friends. Then another kid came along, and he bought his, and he started stealing
competing
business.
Against you.
That little shit.
Well, it's just, you know, any time that they, you know, they sue Napster out of existence, to me, it's always like they create bigger monsters by doing stuff like that, because now you've got everything's decentralized and you can, it's so much easier to me, it's even easier now to get, and there's so much more variety than there was before had they just left Napster alone.
Exactly. That's an excellent point. Like, there would be no reason for us to have all of these decentralized systems and be creating things that the government couldn't spy on if they hadn't been abusing it so much for the last few years. You know, we would just still be operating under that system. But because there's such a big thing with us all being spied on or people being sued for stealing music, it's like, yeah, we're going to develop our own systems now.
Or the corporations that have gotten too big and they're trying to eat up everything around them, they're kind of speeding up this whole process of their own demise, I think.
Yeah.
They're run by people that grew up with the industry a certain way, and they seem to be still thinking like it's a scarcity economy where they can actually dictate to you. And Matt and I talk about this in regards to Game of Thrones a lot, because we're both huge fans of that show, and you know, HBO doesn't make that show available legally until a year after it's on. Nobody's going to wait a year. I mean, I buy a lot of TV shows online, and they're generally available next day. And when all your family and friends have seen a show and you want to, you know, join in that conversation, nobody's going to wait a year. HBO could eliminate that piracy just by selling it. I mean, I would have bought that show from them sight unseen.
Yeah,
and
kidding.
You know, they don't. And so all those executives are still competing. I mean, they're starting to get a little smarter now, but they all seem to have that attitude that they're the ones in control. And I think all the decentralized systems probably that you guys talk about or that are out there, you know, that everyone is interested in, is because it removes that control from those executives to say when you can and can't watch something. You know, if I want HBO, a show on HBO now, and HBO won't make it available, I'll just take it then. And I won't pay them. And instead of them getting offended at that of, well, you should pay us, you know, maybe you should have competed with that and actually offered it. Because for all those systems, I mean, you run into people that have fake files or, you know, viruses and things like that. It would just be, for most people, they would just go and buy it if it were cheap enough.
Mm-hmm.
But they always overprice it, too.
The price and the release time is just so inconsistent. Like, it would suck to be in Australia because they get everything last. But in Asia, too, like, we see, you know, everything gets pirated. You can see the search results and you can see which movies are popular. It's all the same as the States. Yeah, of course, nothing's being purchased here because it never gets released. And it's way too expensive for most people out here, too. So if they just had, like, a dollar per movie or whatever, a couple bucks, and then released it at the same time, I think they would have a huge market over here.
Well, and you also have the release windows for movies and things, which is always such a stupid, all right, we're going to release it in the movie theater and, you know, April, and then 6 months later you can get it on Blu-ray or DVD and then digital download or whatever, and then the United States gets it one date and then Australia gets it another and China gets it another. We have the ability at this point, because everything is done digitally, just release the movies across the world, and let me decide if I want it on Blu-ray or if I want to go to the theater or if I just want to, you know, watch it at home or whatever. Release everything at the same time as opposed to this staggered release window seems dumb.
Yeah, I think it's the licensing laws in all the different countries are just so archaic and varied. It just doesn't make sense. They should have global licensing laws. And I mean, why do we even need middlemen anyway? Why can't artists just release their own stuff and get paid directly?
That reminds me of Patreon. Have you guys heard of Patreon?
Yeah, actually, Scott Santens, who we had on, he's one of the subreddit moderators for the Basic Income subreddit. He's got a Patreon. He talked about it in our episode. I know he's trying to build sort of a basic income system actually using Patreon.
It seems pretty cool. The owner of Patreon, his name is Jack Conte. He's a musician himself, and he started that to sort of help out musicians like himself, and now he runs his own Patreon campaign for himself. It's pretty cool. Have you seen many successes with that?
I haven't really. I think it seems still like it's fairly new. Like I've started to see more of the authors and artists and musicians that I follow starting to use it a little bit. I don't know if you guys have seen this, and maybe you see it more as digital nomads, but within the circles that I've been part of socially, a lot of people still pay attention to sort of the mainstream entertainment, and they're kind of looking up at that and not really paying attention to what their friends are doing for side projects or things like that. Mm-hmm. And I personally think people should be paying more attention to what the people that they're connected to socially are doing in those kind of spaces, because when you think about sort of the future of work, if we're all going to be freelancers, if everybody's only paying attention to what the mega, mega superstar professionals are doing, there's not going to be a lot of money then in the rest of the economy. And that whole superstar mentality, I mean, there's a lot of garbage in that. We've been big fans of some independent movies, independent documentaries, and obviously just in the podcasting space, there's a lot of creativity and things like that. So I try to pay attention to it, I guess.
I really like the idea of being able to prepay for content on almost like a subscription model. Like there's a lot of bands back home that I know that are struggling, and you know, if they could just get half of their audiences to send them $1 per song, it'd be really easy to do, I think. But how cool would that be if you could fund your favorite artist to make a career out of it?
I know there have been a few bands who have released albums, you know, free and then ask you to pay based on what you feel, you know, feel it's worth or whatever. You know, they averaged about $5 per download, which is, to me, seems fair, especially when you're going directly to your fans and you're cutting out the music industry, who takes a major, you know, the majority chunk anyhow.
Actually, yeah, if you think about it, I will be more likely to pirate music if I think I'm taking money away from the big company. But if it's just an independent release, I'll definitely pay them. So I wonder if this sort of middleman thing actually has a negative effect on the potential revenue coming in for these bands. Probably huge.
I would think it does. I know when, go back to Napster for a minute, when Napster was huge, I mean, both Matt and I had big CD collections, and downloading from that, I just figured, well, I've given all this money to the recording industry, and a lot of these albums only have one or two good songs. I'm just taking back some of that by downloading these things, particularly when they don't release them anyway. I think the problem is, for most people, they're so overwhelmed with things they have to pay attention to, that it kind of gets to that, well, I don't want to invest the time or energy.
People pay attention so much to this kind of top-down media model where they just know about the top artists and they watch TV and hear the top politicians. But maybe in the future, it'll be a lot more distributed. How would you say it? Like a sharing economy. And people will have more incentive to share their friends' projects because their friends will also reciprocate and share their projects.
I think you've already seen that a lot. The problem is, for a lot of people, they feel so overwhelmed by the future and they're bombarded by all this stuff that they don't know where to look next. I took a Coursera course on behavioral economics, and one of the big lessons that came out of there is that most people actually pay more attention to loss. You know, they're concerned with losing what they have rather than finding something new. So they're fans of the bands that they're already fans of. You know, they don't want to miss the new thing from that band versus go out and maybe find something new. You know, I mean, getting people to pay attention to new is really difficult sometimes. And I'm just surprised that more people don't share the projects by people they know. Everybody is chasing after these viral things, you know, and sharing cat photos or this or that meme. I mean, those things get plenty of sharing already. What about, you know, your friend who put out an album himself, you know, just recorded MP3s or something like that? I mean, a lot of people don't share their friends' stuff, it seems like, at least within my social circles. Man, I don't know if your experience is any different.
Yeah, no, it's the exact same way, almost like pulling teeth. And, you know, I think a lot of people look at it as, you know, it's not the traditional way of getting a business started or get, you know, doing something like that, but it's becoming that way. And, you know, maybe it's because Mike and I are a little bit older. We're kind of in that middle ground in between the old people and the young people now who are just starting to, you know, to do this more and who are decentralizing. So
I wonder if you know, as younger people get older, as the Gen Yers are starting to get into their 30s or starting to get their shit together a little bit in terms of organizing these kinds of decentralized systems, and maybe they'll start taking off more. And within those systems, obviously, there's an ecosystem and a culture that develops. There will be more incentive for people to kind of have this reciprocity rather than just a top-down feeding.
You know, you mentioned that resistance a couple times, the resistance to trying something new. And there's an element of this when it comes to marketing that's really interesting, where you can have models of behavior because people are resistant, so they act predictably. I took a course recently on Facebook about Facebook ads, and this guy implemented this element of social proof into his ads where he would target people in cheaper countries like Malaysia or Pakistan, and he'd rack up the likes and shares of the posts before he started to advertise to people in the US, because the click-through rates and the conversion rates were so much higher on posts and ads that had more social engagement already present. So it's kind of interesting how that behavior can become predictable, and then you can easily, marketers and businesses can easily develop manipulating tactics to kind of swing behavior one direction or another. And I think that generation versus, I guess you would say Generation Y, right, or even younger, where people are born into this technology and born advertised to constantly, and their bullshit detection is just through the roof. I think you can definitely see a difference in the generation and how they are successfully advertised to, how successfully you can advertise to them and get them to do something, one thing or another. So, I mean, like for a younger generation, you'd introduce them to a Kickstarter campaign or music or something, and they maybe would be more willing to adopt that than some of the older generations who just like their bands and like their movies and don't want to change.
Yeah, I think, you know, watching people who are younger and to some extent everybody, but especially people who are younger who have been advertised and, you know, and like you said, have that bullshit detection, they seem to find things only through their friends and through recommendations. They really don't find things, you know, at least watching them, they don't seem to ever really find things through being advertised to it. It's more of a, you know,
organic.
Yeah, I mean, like even if you're going to a restaurant, everybody checks, you know, Yelp, how is the restaurant or whatever, and, you know, let's see if we're, you know, if it's worth going to, and if they have poor Yelp reviews, you just get, you know, you go somewhere else or whatever. And recommendations seem to carry way, way more weight than anything else.
So from your perspective, where do you see the downsides or positive sides of this kind of behavior that you see with the younger generation?
I think some of it is easy to game. I mean, like you take Yelp reviews or things like that. There are people that sell those, you know. I mean, actually in my Coursera behavioral economics course, they did a study where they had two restaurants across the street from each other. If they put like just actors even or just pay people to sit at tables out in front of it, that was the restaurant that ended up being popular, even though they basically served the same food at them. And, you know, I think you guys did an episode about the way we're sort of wired through evolution. I'm forgetting the title of it now, but I literally just listened to it last night. You know, I think that there's always these social pressures or social ways of, you know, we're all following our tribe, so to speak. And it's just a matter of finding a tribe out there. And I really personally have thought ever since getting on the internet that people should be more participating. Mm-hmm. In sort of the process of getting news or, you know, creating content. I mean, even calling it creating content is such a BS way of speaking about it. I think that everybody has a story and they should be sharing it. And that's one of the ways that as a culture we would develop a lot more empathy. I think Clay Shirky has a book called Here Comes Everybody. And it's on my reading list. I haven't gotten to it yet, but I've read some stuff he wrote about the book, that idea that everybody has a story to share. The problem I've found, anytime you get on the internet, there's a gazillion people doing whatever you could think of. I mean, there's already somebody doing some variation of really any idea you could think of. And so I found this on Twitter. I end up retweeting a lot of things that say what I want to say better than I would say it myself. Mm-hmm. So I don't actually write a lot of tweets. You know, I just mostly retweet. And so to some people, my account kind of looks like a bot because I retweet a lot. And I've had a few friends unfollow me because they're just like, enough already, quit it. It's like a fire hose. And I think both Matt and I approach that media as, I like the fire hose. I like getting that, but I spend a lot of time doing it, and I guess it seems like a lot of people just aren't interested in putting their time in that way.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you bring up the concepts of content versus stories, because we work in sort of a marketing space. And so we get approached a lot and hired a lot to do content marketing. And of course, that's just a shitty way to say that you want to tell impactful stories that your customers might like. And just educating our clients on that sometimes can get difficult. They're like, oh, but where does this, like, the sale pitch come in? Well, it doesn't, because that's not the point.
Well, the easiest way to get sales is to make something that doesn't suck. But that can be extraordinarily difficult. And in the end, sucking is sort of a subjective term. I mean, I know a lot of people that love Dancing with the Stars, and that makes me want to stab my eyes out with a sandpaper knife. It's just the things that people like. There's no accounting for taste. I mean, what is it they say? 80% of everything is crap. It's just the 80% varies person to person. You know, and when you take that and you apply it to the world's population, it means everything is not crap. One of the things that we've, I think, been interested in doing the podcast is just actually having something to say. It's a lot easier to just have a conversation, you know, like we're all having now, than it is to come up with really stellar prose, for example.
Yeah, kind of talking and riffing on a subject, not even really picking what you're going to talk about. I know what you mean with that. It sometimes seems so contrived when you're trying to make something with the purpose of getting the most views on it as possible, like some compacted micro piece of content, you know? Like, as marketers, we kind of get that pressure from clients sometimes where it's like, if it doesn't go viral, it hasn't done its job.
Well, the things that go viral are the things that the best are the things that don't suck. I actually, in 97, I had a website go viral, and it actually landed me on MTV News. And at the time, I had just been doing it because I liked doing it. And I had a day job. I worked in IT. But I did this on the side, and suddenly it went viral, and I was getting, you know, like 10,000 visitors a day all of a sudden, and they all had expectations. And at the time, there weren't the kind of tools that you see now with websites. So very quickly, I got burnt out on trying to update this site manually, and I just kind of gave up on it. It's a lot easier now, but you're also competing with a lot more noise. And for most people, they get overwhelmed by the noise, I think.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of the point of creating something awesome, is that you just really love doing it, and that's why you're doing it. You're not trying to engineer anything.
For us, I'm sure for you guys too, for podcasting, that's really been where it's at. I mean, I love having the conversations that Matt and I had when it was just us, and the guests we've had.
Yeah, that's kind of just the point. Talking shop and kind of throwing around ideas, and sometimes you agree and sometimes you disagree. That's the beauty of it.
What do you think has been some of the most interesting episodes that you guys have done? You've got quite a few under your belt now.
It wasn't even a future one. One of my favorites, anyhow, was the lady we were talking about before, Lenore Skenazy. She wrote a book called Free Range Kids, and neither Mike or I have kids, so it was kind of weird that it set it off for both of us, I think, was she talks about letting kids basically be kids and be by themselves, as opposed to, and I don't know how it is where you guys are, but in the United States now, kids are monitored, you know, from the minute they wake up until the minute they go to bed. All activities are organized, and they don't have that free time, at least Mike and I had when we were kids, where, you know, it was just kind of, all right, it's summertime, the sun's out, go outside, don't come back until it's dinner time.
Yeah, go find a stick.
Exactly. And, you know, and we would entertain ourselves for the entire day and talked with her about how different it is now where kids, you know, just aren't allowed to do that. They're not allowed to. She wrote the book because she got in a lot of trouble for letting her 9-year-old outside without supervision.
That's so crazy.
So we actually did a whole episode on the guests that we've done and what we liked about doing it. It's our 158th episode. We called it sort of Behind the Curtain 2. Because a long time ago, we had done one called Behind the Curtain, sort of about our process. But that entire episode was just about some of the guests we liked having. And, you know, everyone from a couple of the security experts we've talked to, Josh Corman and Space Rogue, down to authors like Lenore, like Martin Ford. We really enjoyed talking to Zoltan. You know, I know you guys have talked to him, too. He seems to make the rounds. But it's just a lot of the – we loved Kate Aquino, for example. I think you guys are going to have her on soon, right? Yeah, she's phenomenal to talk to. I think you guys will really like her. So there's starting to be, it seems like, a little bit of a podcasting future community. I don't know if you guys have talked to the Review the Future guys yet. If you haven't, I would recommend talking to them, too. We did an episode with them. They were a lot of fun.
Who was the lady we just had on recently that was from L.A. that was really, really good, too?
Heather Schlegel.
Yeah, she was fantastic.
She's an official futurist, as in she's got an MBA in forecasting and foresight. So, but she does media production, videos on the future. She had a couple, I think, that we linked to in our show notes with her. But she talks a lot about finance, and so things like Bitcoin. She probably would be interested in Ethereum, and also future of intimacy and relationships. We talked to her about maybe coming back to talk sex robots, which has been one of our most popular episodes, dipped into that well a couple times. But that actually, our first episode on that topic was with Kate.
The sex robot thing, we haven't even touched on that, but that would be an interesting one to do. It's so funny, the idea that you would become gods and you still need to
jerk off.
I doubt God is that horny.
You never know.
That's why don't we end it on that awkward note? Perfect.
Awesome.
All right, guys. Nice to have you on.
Yeah, this has been a lot of fun. Thanks, guys. Yeah.
All right, that's it for this episode. If you want to get all the mentions and links from this episode, go to futurethinkers.org/episode17. Please subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher or any of those other fun places, and we'll see you in the next episode.